You're listening to Win-Win, an entrepreneurial community with your host, Ben Wolf.
And welcome to the Win-Win podcast, the official podcast of Wolf's Edge Integrators. I am Ben Wolf, as always, your host. And we're going to learn from our guest today how to prepare to sell in 3 to 5 years. As what I picked for our topic today, before I get into introducing our guests, I do want to highlight some resources that all of you small and mid-sized business owners and runners can take advantage of, which you can get at wolfsedgeintegrators.com/resources, including most especially, I think there's a roadmap tool, which is a simplified version of what our experienced COOs actually do with our clients that you could use for yourself. In terms of getting clarity on what the roadmap, what the order of operations is, what the steps are to get from where you are now to where you want to be, a bunch of suggested elements to it. It's fully adaptable, and there's a training there, video also on how to use it. So that's a very useful tool I recommend you take advantage of, wolfsedgeintegrators.com/resources. Some other good resources there, how to become a mostly unneeded boss, which is like a 10-page article. Gives you great clear steps there too, as well as a free chapter from my book, Fractional Leadership, Landing Executive Talent You Thought Was Out of Reach. And with that, I want to get into introducing our guest today. He is the founder of Exit Your Way, a consultancy that helps business owners prepare for and sell their businesses. I've gotten him to do multiple trainings with my own team of COOs because so many of our clients are interested in selling in the not too distant future. This is following decades of experience that he's had in the executive business leadership, various industries, and in the M&A world, both on the buyer side, the seller side. You can find out more about him at his website, exityourway.com. That's exityourway.com. And with that, I give you Damon Pastolka. Welcome, Damon.
Thanks for having me here today, Ben. Happy to be here.
Well, and my pleasure to have you. And tell me, did I get the pronunciation of your last name right?
Yes, she did, Pastolka.
Okay, yep. Okay.
Yeah, you got it.
That's a good thing. I should have asked you before we started recording.
No, you're good. It's all good.
Well, I appreciate you making the time today. If you could please give us a little context. What's a quick 2-minute background on where you came from and how you got to be talking about and helping clients on exiting more effectively?
Yeah, it was absolutely nothing I ever thought I would be doing until I started doing it. I grew up in South Dakota on a family farm, had no idea what I was going to do when I went to college, stumbled my way into engineering and graduated degree, started working in manufacturing. And before I knew it, I was doing some pretty cool projects, building out some facilities. And ultimately, for that company, it was an injection molding company. I built and led one of their facilities in the Southeast for 5 years before I started working, running facilities and companies then for other manufacturers. And that was a family-owned business. It was rapidly growing. So literally I wasn't even 30 yet, and I was building and running that facility. Mm. And it was a ton of fun and ton of learning too, because I really had some good mentors in the company. The founder was really a good person and really smart business person. And actually his family was. And the next company that I worked in, I had no idea, but it was an investor-owned company. And that was a world of change for me to be able to work in investor-owned companies. And that's where I really discovered M&A, buying and selling companies, and the concept of building to a growth number, a value number for the exit, right? And that's what you have to do in a investor-owned company, unless it's a family-owned where I want to just keep going good, solid returns for the next 50 years or whatever the heck it is for the family. That's good too. But I was in the kind where we're going to run it for 5 to 7 years and then we're going to sell it. So it was a combination throughout of growing organically that company, buying other companies, and ultimately figuring out what we are going to do with it at the end. And in that one, we sold it. And the next thing you know, I'm off and doing that again with more investors, buying and selling and building companies, and until 2010, when I stepped out on my own to do consulting, and then 2015 when we started Exit Your Way.
Very cool. Well, I mean, you certainly got the background to understand then. I mean, with that kind of background, first in running companies, and then in working in investor-led companies that were ultimately geared towards sale from the beginning, mm-hmm. Besides the growth. For business owners when is the, like, if they're thinking of selling, they're thinking of exiting in some way, when's the right time to start thinking about that, to start thinking about and planning for that sale?
Well, it depends a lot on the size of the business, but honestly, if you got a business that, you know, if you're making several million dollars in profit a year, you really should start 7 or more years sooner, because the tax lawyers can save you hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars in taxes throughout if you get really early. But there's holding periods that you have to do. And I learned this when we started Exit Your Way. I've tried learning stuff, and I was just amazed. We don't do many deals in that multiple 10 million size, but when you're doing deals like that and you're going to get $10 million, it's worth it to start way, way early on that kind of stuff. It's also worth it to start 5+ years just talking to a financial advisor going, okay, what's my portfolio look like? And this is how me, myself, my family, whatever wants to live after the business. How much money do I need to extract from the business to continue living that lifestyle? And if they do that and prepare that for, say if I did it tomorrow, say if I do it in 2 years from now and I continue on, so they can kind of get an idea, because people go, oh, you sell businesses, but they think it's strange when I start talking about financial planning and those kind of things. But the worst thing that can happen is you get to the time that you say, I just want out. Boom. I'm tired, burnt out, whatever. I just don't want to do it, or my health doesn't permit me to do it. And you have to leave, or you don't have the passion to be in the business anymore. And you figure out that your business is worth a third of what you need, or half of what you really need to keep going. So you're stuck in it. And that's where the work that you guys do as integrators and helping is so important, because you help to get that business owner out of the business so they can actually begin working on these other things and thinking about value, thinking about long-term, thinking about what's after the business. But really, it depends on the size. But if you're not doing it 5 years, at least looking at how much I need to extract from this business, if I get out in 5 years between now and then, you can really get pinched in the end.
Well, you covered a lot. There's a lot that I would want to dive into more in what you just said. But let me go back to something earlier that you said, which is you talked about 7 years plus. You talked about hundreds of thousands or millions that could be saved. Yeah. You talked about holding periods. I'm not familiar with that. Can you speak more on that stuff?
And I'm not a tax attorney, but I'm going to tell you, if you're going to do a transaction and you're going to get $10 million from your business, you need to talk to tax attorneys that are specifically working with people around exits to help them mitigate taxes, because there are things that you can do that early, and I might not even be quoting the right things, because I've listened to them and I know enough to get the smart people in the room. And what they'll do is they'll say, listen, if you are going to contribute $1 million to charity, let's do that now, because then, or give them shares, give the charity shares in your company at the exit, but we have to set this up now. If you want to set up trust for your children, if you want to do different things like that, all that stuff sets up, and you can transfer wealth ahead of when you're going to pay capital gains. You don't pay capital gains on it when you go out. And that's the thing that they really,
there's
do.
Certain look back periods that you could.
Yeah. There's look back periods. Yeah. So that's really what the holding periods are for these kind of things. You can't do it 2 days before, you know, you've got to be done ahead of time. And I don't know them, but I'm going to tell you, if anyone wants to, I know some people I can refer them to, but you know, these are not your business attorney today. I will tell you that they are likely not your business attorney today, unless you are talking with someone that specializes in that kind of deal and taxes for that kind of deal.
Well, again, you want those kind of referrals for tax professionals, obviously exityourway.com. You could reach Damon that way. Let's go back to that piece about financial advisors or wealth management, because what you're pointing out, and what people, you know, you don't want to find yourself in a pinch, like already when you want to sell very soon, and only start preparing then. And that's why my first question for you really was, how far before the sale do you need to start preparing? That's the whole reason for that. So when you look at this thing of financial advisors, it sounds like you're saying that that's where, like, you can't work towards a target if you don't know what your target is. Your personal financial goals, you need to know what you need. You need to figure out what you need, because you may not be able to figure that out on your own. You need to know what you need And then that person can help you paint that target. So now you know where you need to get the business to go to. So you know a certain minimum. Look, anything above that is great, but you know what the minimum is going to be. You know what the tax implications are going to be, what other players might get money, where money might go, and you can work backwards from there. But only if you have that personal financial advisor that lets you know, based on your own goals for your life and your family's life, what your goal even needs to be.
Yeah, that's exactly. And before we started Exit Your Way, I had no idea the extent that financial advisors can do that. They can say, listen, this is how you're living your life. You want to have a home in wherever, you know, a second home. You want to be able to travel this much. You want to, you know, buy a new car every year, whatever it is. They'll figure that all in. And you want to give so much away to philanthropy. They'll figure it all in and say, listen, you need this much in assets to give you that residual income to do that. And it's far more than most people realize. But as you said, it gives that business owner what I need to extract from the business. And it can be extracted in, I'm going to take it from the current year's proceeds, because if I'm already doing that, that might help me over, say it's 3 years, and I can take some out each year and apply it towards that, and the sale of business. And I mean, in smaller businesses, sometimes it's not feasible to grow it to the level they need. So they really have to stay in it for 7 years to get what they need and build the value of the business and take more out as they can from the profits of the business every year. It is a key thing, because if you look at why businesses don't sell, it's because the buyer and seller can't agree on price. Well, it's usually, and this is why we started Exit Your Way. We were traditional investment banker business brokers when we started it. And I said, you talk to enough people and you realize how much they don't understand about value and how they're here and the market's here, and they just won't get deals done. And this is where that financial piece, understanding, first of all, what I need is the key first step.
Right. It sounds like you're saying that the next biggest mistake people make is not understanding the value of their business. What do people need to know? What have you found is the biggest mistake? What do people need to know about the actual market value of their business? Not the emotional value, not what they feel it's worth in their gut, but like what the actual free market will pay them for it. What do people need to understand?
Well, it is this simple. They have to be able, if you're going to sell your business, put yourself in the buyer's shoes. I'm going to invest or take out loans, and usually it's a matter of both. And I'm going to have repayment on loan, repayment and return on my investment. They have to be able to buy your business at a value that allows them to repay and make a return on their investment and their labor, right? So if you look at it from a simple standpoint, like now the SBA, I don't know, the interest rates may have gone up a little bit from this, but used to be here 6-8 months ago that it took about $220,000 in cash flow, free cash flow every year, EBITDA, if you're doing it right, to support $1 million in business value. And it's that simple, right? Because a lot of, if you're sub 5 million and $5 to $7-8 million in value, people are probably going to buy your business with an SBA loan. And the SBA has very strict guidelines on what they can, how they can, the cash debt service ratios that they have to cover to establish value. It's not like you can say, I want $10 million when the business value is seven. The investors, if they got investors, the banks, and there's so many other people that control that. So you really need to know what it's worth, because those unrealistic expectations are just, you just won't sell it. You won't.
What are the different kinds of buyers, and how do you know, how do you know which one of those kinds of buyers is most likely the right one that you should prepare for? Probably makes a difference which kind of buyer is likely to buy it for, even how you prepare. What are the different kinds of buyers? How does that fit into this?
Well, you just make sure I'm hitting all of them. So there's two types of investment buyers mainly. And those are going to be either like a search fund buyer, where they've got a CEO with funding behind them. And those people will buy a business that's you know, 500,000 in profit up to about 2 or 3 million in profit, they'll buy something like that. And there's all kinds of industries they'll do that in and do it. And then you go a little bit bigger and say you're over 5 million in EBITDA or profit, roughly the same kind of thing, but there's some differences. And that's going to be more of an investment buyer that's looking to buy that business as a platform company to buy other businesses and combine and continue building that through acquisitions. So those are two kinds of buyers that are you're going to see in the investment buyer. The other buyer you can see is an individual that might want to buy you that's like, listen, you've got a smaller business that's someone that's got some cash and can go get a loan, and they're going to be able to buy the business from you on this off the street. That's your more smaller kind of buyer that you're going to see. And then you're going to see a strategic buyer, and your strategic buyer is oftentimes a very good buyer if you are attractive to them. So if you're in say I'm in Seattle today, and there's some very large heating and plumbing companies in the area here, and they're backed by private equity. Those are really good buyers. If I was a small heating and plumbing company in the area here, I would be reaching out to them as a buyer, because they have infrastructure and they have all the things that can just help your company and your people fold right into them. And it's more valuable to them than me walking off the street, having to cover all the administrative and other costs in the business. And they can provide a higher value as long as they align with your values and stuff. But that's right. There's really four kinds of buyers there.
And what different things might you have to do to prepare for sale, to get your valuation where it needs to be, depending on which kind of buyer you think is most likely for your business?
Yeah, it's when you're looking at the individual buyer off the street, it's really, really similar to a search fund where they've got a CEO kind of person, because you want to have a good middle management team that can run that business, the day-to-day operations, and you as a CEO are really strategic and you're driving the long-term vision. Now, that's for your individual buyer or your search fund buyer. Those kind of come together. Your strategic buyer now, that really depends on your industry. And what you want to be really good at in that is you want to be really good at executing your customer promise, right? If I'm a plumbing company, I'm known for being there on time, doing good work, got a lot of good reviews, blah, 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 blah. And we're running a tight ship, because that can bolt into another company that's got running a good tight ship really easily, right? And that's where you're going to get a nice higher value. Now, profitability, like I said, is over 5 million. You are going to be looking at that investment buyer that's going to expect that you have an executive management team after you, as the owner, leaves. After you leave, you still need to have an executive management team that can develop and execute a 5-year growth strategy. And they should probably be doing it now. Mm-hmm. And that's the differences between the different kind of preparation you want to do as far as structure of team and those kind of things when you're looking at those four different buyers.
Right. What about when you're thinking more of an ESOP type of exit or selling to your team? What effect does that have?
Well, the ESOPs are really good. And I'm glad you brought them up, because we're actually going through that with one of our clients now and considering it, because ESOPs are really good, but there's a couple caveats to them. They're really good because you can usually get a higher value than most other sales from it, but it's going to require you as the owner to be involved in the business for an extended period of time, sometimes even up to 10 years, and you'll get paid over that period, but you no longer own the business. It's run by the board and the executives doing it. And you have to have over $1 million in employee costs, wages, to be able to qualify for it. I'm not an ESOP expert, but it is a good way to go. And your team still needs to be built out, and it will probably operate like you want to operate in that search fund kind of thing, where you're the CEO, you got to have a solid middle management team. You have to have a good, solid history of profitability, consistent profitability, or growing profitability is better. But it's an incredible opportunity for companies that have a lot of labor, like a plumbing company, like a construction company, like a healthcare company. I mean, these are really good for it because it does provide the owners a more return on their effort. And over time, that might be good. And then two, for the business going forward after it, they operate without federal or state income taxes, which is huge. And now don't quote me because there might still be some income taxes, but I was just talking to a gentleman about that recently. But that tax advantage is really something because you can reinvest that 20 or 30% that would normally go other places for taxes into growth of the company again.
Right.
And the other benefit is employee ownership, right? Now your long-term employees become owners. They're building value and stock in the company. And when they leave, it's worth money.
Right.
I think it's really cool. And so cool. I've had a family member, they did it, and it's been an incredible experience for all the owners.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. what's a good recent case study or example that you've had of somebody, like, how did, you know, what were their goals? What kind of business was it? How did they prepare? What happened upon exit?
Yeah, we had a staffing company that we worked with recently that was specialized staffing. Owner was kind of burnt out. They were doing well. They had been growing pretty rapidly, and we started helping them. We said, listen, you have to hire a CEO. You need to do this. We need to keep the growth going, even though you're growing very aggressively. We're not going to project that aggressive growth out. But this owner really had some high expectations on value. And over about a year, they got a CEO in that was really running the company. I mean, running the company, making the deals. And the owner was truly out leading the vision, doing the things that they did. And the CEO had it set up so the financial piece and the systems piece and the people piece was tight. And they were on about a 70% growth rate after a 100% growth rate. And we were projecting another 20% in the next year, but we were already blowing that out of the water. And they were able to exit, and it actually got into a bidding war, and they got about a 20% premium, and they got 96% of their money at the close, which is almost unheard of. And it was nearly a $10 million deal.
And what category of buyer was that?
It was an investment buyer, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause they were combining it with other similar companies.
Uh-huh.
And the team, the structure, the geographic coverage they have, it was really attractive to that investment buyer with one of their other companies.
Now, one of the things I've heard you talk about when you were doing, as I mentioned in the introduction here, I've had you do three trainings with my team of fractional COOs, because we do have so many clients that are that are thinking in the mid to near term of wanting to exit. And so to up-level our skills, our knowledge on how to help people prepare for that. One of the things that you've talked about there is the idea of a board and reporting that's going to set things up in a way that's going to make it much smoother and more attractive for certain kinds of buyers. Can you talk a little bit about what that is, why it's important?
Yeah. Well, I think it's important. Once you get to a certain size, you should have an advisory board. Man, when you get to $2-3 million in revenue, if you don't have at least a couple people that you're bringing together a couple times a year to talk about your business, you're probably missing out, because those outside perspectives are really valuable. But as we look and we get into that, where you're going to be making $1 million a year kind of thing, so you're five or so million dollars in top line revenue kind of thing, you want to have a monthly board meeting. You want to have three or four board members outside the company, and you as the owner and maybe your highest level other executive in the company that are in there, but you want to go over financial results. And the financial results are a short piece, but setting this up so there's actually a board process, a package that gets put together so people can review it and go through, okay, this is how we did, and this is where we're going every month. Because if you're going to sell into an investment buyer or really anyone else, you're going to be able to demonstrate how you've led that business, and then they're going to see how the performance resulted as that have, you know, after, as you go along down the road. And that's a huge thing for buyers, because they can see that you've got a process in place to see where you're going, communicate how we're getting there, and then execute on it. And it's so valuable for that buyer to be able to see more and more about that.
What impact does that have on valuation and what they'll actually pay?
Well, it's oftentimes whether they'll buy or not.
Uh-huh.
It really is.
It's a matter of exiting or not.
Yeah. A lot of these things are binary. Like, it's like, you know, if you don't have this, they just won't do it. They can't because investor or whatever. But what it really does is, when you look at it, it's probably in the, I don't know if you're guessing, anywhere from a quarter to a half a multiple, you know. So if you're, and when we talk about multiples, it's a multiple of the profit of the business. But it makes it so much more attractive, because especially to investors, because if you can just say, listen, drop a person or two on our board, it's already set up, this is the package, what else would you like to have? It's great, because they don't have to go in and do that and teach everybody and spend the months doing it. And it's also good for the owner, because the owner gets used to the process and used to understanding more and more about seeing how my business is running from those meetings, and really how that long-term strategic direction and then performance measurement works.
Last question. What do you tell business owners who don't have a realistic notion of their company's value? What do you tell them? How do you get them to the point of realizing and accepting the reality of their valuation, what they can actually get?
Honestly, most times can't, because this is something I'll say publicly over and over again. The investment banking business brokerage world does not serve business owners very well, because they can go down the street and find someone to tell them probably the number they want to hear.
Uh-huh.
And usually people come to us if they've had those unrealistic expectations, if they come back after they haven't been able to sell. And right. That's really what happens. I mean, because somebody else will inevitably say it's worth as much as they want it to be worth and try to sell it. And that's the biggest challenge against that. I mean, but it comes back again to math, right? If you look at the logical approach to valuing a business, you have to pay the debt back on it and return on your effort. It's A plus B equals C. And if it's more than that, it's not going to work.
Right.
And our clients over time are A, willing to listen about that and understand more about valuation. And we've got a ton on our resource page too about valuations, or just go out and search the internet, lots of stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's really, you need to be informed on it to make a good educated decision. Because gut, you said it at the beginning, you know, emotional value, they're worth 100 times what you're going to get paid right. for, right? Because you blood, sweat, and tears, sleepless nights, all that stuff. But you got to be realistic.
Well, I know I said that last one was the last question, but one last question. One thing I've heard you talk about before other times and that we've spoken is the likelihood of successful sale depending on the age of the business owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What pattern have you noticed there?
If you're, and this isn't anything scientific, right? But if you're anecdotal, 7 years.
Okay. Caveat.
Yeah, anecdotal. And my partner said this, and I didn't realize it until after you've been in a while. If you're 70 years old and you're in your business, you're probably not going to sell it. It's just because it gets too emotional. It's just the emotion of selling is too high. And the other thing that I tell people too is, if it's that emotional for you, plan on shutting it down when you can't run it. Be ready to do that. And run it right up to the end if you absolutely love it that much. You don't have to sell it. You can make an orderly liquidation. You can even have it so you've got people that will orderly liquidate it if you, you know, have a stroke and can't do it anymore. You should do that early, just in case. And then we always ask our clients that. Say, you have a heart attack tomorrow, what are we supposed to do, right? Because you want to do that. But in the long term, if that's what you do and you love that business so much, you want to work at it until the very last day, set it up so your family doesn't have to deal with it after that. Mm-hmm. And it just, someone takes care of that stuff for you. That's a perfectly acceptable exit. And because not everybody should sell.
Right.
I mean, there's sometimes when just that orderly liquidation when it's time is the greatest option.
Right. Awesome. Well, I truly appreciate this. I know this is highly, highly valuable for people to hear, get a realistic idea, start planning 7, 3, 5 years in advance as much as you can. Think about getting as the owner out of the day-to-day operations, putting a board into place, think about what kind of buyer you need, what that kind of buyer is going to be looking at in terms of valuation, paint that target so you even know what the business needs to be worth with that realistic valuation for you to fulfill your goals in life. So you could come up with, together with your leadership team, together with your advisors, a realistic plan of how to get there in some period of time. Even maybe it's a little longer than you would have hoped, but if it's going to get you to your goal, better than not getting to your goal or starting to try to shoot for it after you want to already be selling. So I really appreciate this.
Thank you for having me today, Ben.
Yeah, no, my pleasure and everyone else's pleasure to be able to learn from this. But thank you, Damon, and everybody else. We'll see you. And again, just exityourway.com, and everybody else will see you on the other side. Thank you.
You're listening to Win-Win, an entrepreneurial community with your host, Ben Wolfe.